This is a Stand Up Labs production, powered by digital media.
This is the final episode of the Mandatory Samson podcast for the year 2016. Joey is not here, but you know who is? Matt, say what's up to the people.
I'm taking Joey's seat today.
He might just be a permanent member of this podcast. I don't know.
They call me the usurper.
Stick around. We got a really good episode. Final Trump administration update before he becomes the president of the United States. A lot of other really interesting stuff. The UN Security Council resolution on Israel and a lot of stuff. Stick around. I think you'll enjoy it.
Very serious.
This is the Mandatory Samson Podcast, coming to you from Stand Up New York Labs in New York City. My name is Christopher Flannery. Usually I'm joined by one Joseph Noe, but he is on his way to Nashville to ring in the new year in Tennessee. So joining me today for the first time as my co-host, you know him, you love him. Got Matt Weiss here. What's up, buddy?
Thanks for having me, Chris. As I'm sitting in Joey's seat today intentionally. I had to usurp his seat if I'm going to be in his position.
I like what you're doing. It's marking your territory.
It's a power play.
Yeah, he's going to pee on it before he leaves. I think it's a smart move.
Already have.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's going to be an interesting episode. welcome to the year's final episode, Samsonites. We got a good one here, and here's what we're talking about. We got three interesting quick hits involving Kurt Eichenwald, which was sent to me and us from David at mandatorysampson@gmail.com, the NYPD, and the death penalty. We're going to talk about these things separately, not in one story. That would be a pretty wild story. We also are going to discuss the UN's Israel resolution, which has been a pretty big deal over the last week or so. And we're going to talk about artificial intelligence, which was sent to us from Jeff on Twitter, before we get into the final Trump administration update of the year. And actually, it'll be the last one we do before Donald Trump is actually the president of the United States.
That's terrifying to think of.
Yeah. We have no episodes, just to remind you guys, if you didn't listen the last couple of weeks, no episodes for the next 2 weeks following this episode. We will be back on January 20th, which is Inauguration Day. We'll be recording on the 19th, but I'll be away because I'm not going to record next week because I'm getting married on the 7th, and then I'll be on my honeymoon, so I'm not going to be able to do it.
And then when you finally start up again, I'll be out of the country for a couple weeks.
That's right. You're actually going to be in Israel, which is perfect because we have a bit to talk about.
I'll see if I can have a conversation with Netanyahu while I'm over there. Just see.
That's really what it is. That's why we're sending you there. Yeah. Like, you're making it seem like it's a birthright thing, but it's really you're doing research for the program. We appreciate it.
I go deep undercover.
Yes. All right. Before we get into anything, I want to read an email we got from Jordan. It's just quick off the top. And then actually, we were just discussing something before we started recording that you're going to bring up. There's some information about Russia and the United States and sanctions that we're going to get into quickly before we get into anything else. All right. Email from Jordan. He says, "Dear Man Samp and podcast crew, what are good documentaries, books, publications, etc. that you have found to be very informative about what Assange and WikiLeaks, Snowden, etc. have done in terms of exposing secrets and giving true information? I've listened to you guys talk about these and others who pride themselves in true journalism. I'd love to hear more about them and others. Keep doing what you're doing. Sincerely, your open-minded conservative Republican listener." I love that. I really appreciate it. Thank you for writing in, Jordan. I answered Jordan, and I told him, I don't really think that I've mentioned too many documentaries or things specifically about WikiLeaks or Snowden. Definitely Citizen 4, which was an HBO documentary that involves Laura Poitras. She shot it, and it involves Glenn Greenwald, and I can't remember the other Guardian journalist that was involved in that. But the documentary follows Snowden from a couple of days before the revelations come out in our media, and they're actually in the hotel room with him as he's explaining the information, who he is and all that stuff. And then it follows him as he leaves to go to China, and then he ends up in Russia. But that's a phenomenal documentary, really interesting, gives you a real insight into how, you know, the leaks came out and what Snowden's mindset was and what kind of person he is. Great documentary. I also, I think, mentioned last week, or whatever, Manufacturing Consent. It's a Noam Chomsky documentary. It's like 3 hours. It's a little dry, which I said to Jordan, but it's very interesting about how official, I'm doing air quotes, official sources can, within the government, manipulate the media into being biased towards the official source because that's the only people you can go to. So that's a really interesting documentary.
Well, Noam Chomsky is not known for his entertainment value. He's known for being incredibly intelligent.
Yeah, a brilliant linguist and philosopher and, you know, writer and activist.
Far more intelligent than either of us.
Oh, please. The guy's brilliant. So it's really, he's a great guy to get a long view kind of perspective on all this stuff. So that, and then I also said, if you go to collateralmurder.com, that's the video that WikiLeaks put out, which I mentioned a number of times. And Chelsea Manning is the alleged source there, which, you know, we're pretty sure that that's information that she gave to WikiLeaks, but WikiLeaks won't confirm that source. Okay. And then other than that, man, I mean, it's just a lot of, you know, I know I've read a ton of articles and different things about WikiLeaks. But I can't, you know, I don't know. I can't think of anything like specifically off the top of the head. But those are some of the documentaries I've watched, and they're interesting. But there's a lot of stuff out there about Assange that you can, you know, watch. And if you find anything good, definitely write back. Let us know about it.
Yeah, that's
you're nailing it. That's exactly what Joey would have done. He would be like, "Great point."
And then you're looking at me like this is one topic I don't have any more documentaries to offer. I just appreciate you saying that you're open-minded conservative. I don't care about which side of the aisle you're on, as long as you're willing to talk.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's the only way we're going to be able to get anything done.
Well, and be willing to listen, not just talk.
Yeah, you got to. Well, and really, we're getting to the point now where, you know, there has to be an agreement on what a fact is, you know, what truth is. We're getting to the point where people will go, "Oh, it's from the New York Times, I don't buy it. Oh, it's from Huffington Post, I don't buy it."
We need more fact-checked media, not less.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to, at a certain point, you have to do the work yourself and go, "I find this source to be reliable." You can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater and go, "Well, if it comes from the New York Times, I'm not going to listen to it." Find journalists that you actually appreciate and people that you think are putting out the real information that jives with other sources that you've seen left or right. And that's the only way we're going to do it. But we cannot get to a point where nothing is factual, because then we're not really having an argument anymore. It's going to ping pong back and forth of, if Republicans are in charge, they're going to take their own sources. If liberals are in charge or Democrats, we cannot get to that point.
Well, when you part of it is you have to be able to critically think, which is not an easy skill. You can't teach critical thought that easily.
No. Well, and they should be trying to do that in school, high school and college and whatever, but we've seen that evaporate. And that's a liberal thing as well in the college sphere, I would say.
But I mean, it's also just humans are, not every human thinks for themselves. They follow the herd.
Yeah, you gotta be, if you want to know this information and you want to have a fact-based conversation, you have to do your own research and compare sources and critically think, like you said.
But another thing, like the difference, one of the huge differences between a Breitbart versus the New York Times is not just the fact-checking. You can have an entirely factual article written by Breitbart. You can have something that, yes, it is true, but as on a grander scheme, there's going to be more conflicts of interest, more people who, like, more reason to skew a source from Breitbart than a more reputable organization that actually reveals who's funding it, and you understand where the money's coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, there's a big difference between an organization like a Breitbart, which, you know, is definitely the organization, the model is conservative. It is more right, you know, it's pretty far right. A New York Times, people go, "Oh, it's a liberal, this and that." Yeah, probably guaranteed a lot, you know, big percentage, majority of the writers that write for the New York Times are liberal politically. But that doesn't mean that it's going to color everything they do with a bet. You know, they're not necessarily going to distort information. That's the crucial thing. You know, you have to understand the modus operandi of the organization, you know, as opposed to, or whatever, you know, as opposed to like just assuming it's a liberal thing and that's, you know, that's the end of it.
Well, we'll get to it later, but on one of the articles you sent me this week, there's one line I hated where it's like, you could tell it was a liberal thing that was written, and just, they let their opinions skew the article so horribly. It's like, oh, I hated the wording in it.
Well, but that's an important thing though, being able to go, well, this is a liberal bent. This part of the article is an opinion and it's liberal. Throw it out then. That's fine. But there's probably information there. You have to be able to do that.
And you should be able to express, as a good writer, you should be able to express your opinion through facts.
Yeah.
You should not, like, unless you're writing an editorial, you should not be putting your opinion in there. You should say, you should back everything up you want to say up with facts.
Yes and no. I think, you know, if you want a completely unbiased, well, whatever. I mean, obviously, yeah, there's probably some bias here, but you can go to Reuters if you want something that's going to be very factual. It's not going to inject its own opinion. They're very careful about that. Go read Reuters. You know, I don't know what it's necessarily called, but their stylistic code, the way that they won't call something a terrorist attack. They'll call it this or that. Go look into that. You know, that's a good Reuters. Go to them if you want straight news. I don't necessarily have a problem with people injecting their opinion. We do it. But I'm also not changing the reality of the facts of a case or an article or a situation to fit my particular ideology. You know, I'll tell you the facts of the case and then go, I think, you know, so you have to be able to sort that out.
This also isn't claiming to be journalism. This is, you're taking what journalists have done, combining these sources, and then giving your opinion on it. This is, by definition, more editorial.
Right. Yes, absolutely. All right. So anyway, so that's what I have to say there. By the way, I told Jordan, you know, if you want some other recommendations about documentaries on different topics, let me know, you know, email or Twitter or whatever, because I love documentaries and I have a pretty decent collection, I would say, of things that I've watched. So putting that out there. All right. Ready to get into the first thing here?
Yep.
Twitter subpoena and Kurt Eichenwald. This is a very interesting story. Again, this was sent to us from David yesterday or whatever, the day before, and I really appreciate it. On December 15th, and did you read this?
Yes, I did. Okay. Yeah, I saw
this. Oh, you know what? Before we get into it, actually, with the UN, United States thing. Tell me about
this. Just came out a little bit before, like after Chris did the rundown a little bit earlier today. So the U.S. has expelled 35 Russians in response to the hacking for the election. And also imposing sanctions on intelligence organizations. So this is all about spying and... apparently they have been thinking about the proper sanctions for months, according to the New York Times article I read. And
right.
I'll pull up Trump's response, which was always unintelligible, but
yeah, pull up Trump's response. Now, when you say the U.S. expelled 35 Russians, meaning people within the intelligence community or just Russians that are living here that we know are in official capacity with Russia, like what's the,
in the intelligence community with, that are believed to be spying, that are believed to be involved in the spying organizations. I believe it was two spying organizations or two intelligence organizations have been sanctioned, as well as
two
like
Russian intelligence. Yeah,
yes, it's all geared towards Russia.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and then so, well, and now because we were talking about it before, while you get the Trump, you know, quote up, we talked about it last week with the Assange interview on Hannity, which, by the way, is another example of you can take information knowing there's a bias. Fox News is definitely right wing. Hannity couldn't be farther right wing. But he asked good questions, and I like the answers I got from Assange. So you know that. You know why he's asking certain questions. That's the difference between, you know, just throwing a whole thing out completely and knowing going into it, yeah, it's probably going to have a right-wing bias, but you have to be able to sort through that. Assange said in that interview that the source is not the state of Russia. This move by the Obama administration seems to point to the maybe not the opposite of that, but it's something that we said where it might not be Russia specifically, but Russia might have directed hackers within that community, and then they became the source.
This says that they believe that these are the Russian organizations that ordered the hacking.
Right.
But it doesn't mean... What Assange said is that his source was not Russia.
Well, it'd be like Obama coming to Matt and going, "Hey, Matt, I need you... Hey, Matt, I need you to do this."
I would tell you I am highly underqualified, but...
Right, but he comes to you and he goes, "I need you to go get an everything bagel with cream cheese, and then you got to go give it to Julian Assange." You go, okay, you do that, you're the source now.
Yeah.
But it is directed by high level, but your hands aren't...
Also, for the underqualified part in that, I would probably eat the bagel along the way. I really like everything bagels and cream
cheese.
Listen,
it's a long walk from Washington to wherever Assange is, England.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd probably get hungry along the way.
Let me get this Trump quote. This is what Trump had to say in response to the sanctions, which, by the way, we're going to talk about it later with the Israel, you know, UN resolution. The Obama administration is doing... They're trying to safeguard things as much as possible and put things in motion that Trump will either have to publicly reverse or not do anything about. But we could talk about that a little later.
And forgive me that my Trump accent isn't quite as good as yours.
I'm not even going to try.
Never apologize. I think we ought to get on with our lives. I think that computers have complicated lives very greatly. The whole age of computer has made it where nobody knows exactly exactly what is going on. We have speed. We have a lot of other things, but I'm not sure what we have the security we need.
That's a crazy thing to say. We have the speed. Like, yes, computers are confusing, I guess. You know, it's such a cop out, and it's also insane to me. If Ronald Reagan, you know, is well known and well respected in the Republican community for standing up to the Soviet Union and telling them to tear down the, you know,
tear down that wall.
Yeah. Tear down Mr. Gorbachev. But now, because of whatever relationship Trump has with Russia, which, you know, is still going to continue to unfold, very unwilling to even entertain the idea that Russia had something to do with the election. It's extremely crazy. And if Obama, could you imagine? I've used this example before. I don't know on the podcast, but I've had conversations. If there was evidence that the second time Obama got elected or the first time, you know, the Taliban or something, or Afghanistan or whatever, another act, Iran. Could you imagine if Obama got elected and there was pretty, you know, there's evidence mounting that Iran impacted the election to try to keep McCain or whoever from becoming the president, and Obama got elected. And he was just like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's not really a problem. Do you think the Republican Party would be like, yeah, okay, yeah, you're right? No, they'd be up in arms. It'd be insane. It's crazy that this is how this is being reacted to from, you know, the Republican side.
Well, my favorite quote or my favorite reaction to Trump's response is just, okay, so we're blaming the computer. Well, when a gun kills someone, it's the person's fault.
Beautiful point. Yeah. Right.
But like now it's the machine's fault?
Yeah, it's too complicated. It's too complicated. I throw my hands up in the air. I don't know. I don't understand it. It's ridiculous. But okay, so we'll keep our eye on this. I mean, obviously we're not going to be recording for a couple of weeks, so when we get back there might be a lot more to do with this, but again, this is the Obama administration really trying to, you know, batten down the hatches and try to get things done before Trump takes office.
It says that like the Obama administration has been thinking about what to do for months, and also says something about Joe Biden saying there may be a covert action that Mr. Putin will know about, but the American people won't. So that kind of, it's just one of those intriguing things that might amount to nothing.
Yeah, I guess I saw it. I don't know where I saw it or I read it, but there was a guy who's a Republican, you know, intelligence strategist or whatever that might be involved in the Trump administration. He's essentially said the same thing. Like if something's going to be done to Russia, more than likely it's going to be something the press isn't going to know about. We're not going to know about it, but Russia will know. And it reminded me of Conor McGregor, who's a UFC fighter. I'm sure a lot of people know. He had a fight against Chad Mendes, this other guy. And he was saying, you know, he goes to the body, he'll throw a body shot. And he goes, only we know. You know what I mean? It doesn't look like much to everybody that's watching, but we know the toll it's taking. It's taking the cardio out of him. It's taking the heart out of him. That's what this is. You know, and that's what it reminds me
only
of.
Putin knows how much it takes to get punched in the gut by the CIA.
Right. And nobody's going to see it. He's just going to have to and walk around with it. But
so something tells me it's hard to cause Vladimir Putin that much pain.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. All right. So anyway, good job with that. Now, this story is ridiculous. It's not so much... It more speaks to just the political environment, the culture, and like where things are going. And then also it kind of goes into how much do we want our social media sites to be involved in litigation and things. Okay, so let's get into it. On December 15th, Newsweek journalist Kurt Eichenwald, who's done a lot of reporting about Trump, his conflicts of interest, and a lot of different things, you know, during the campaign, he was sent a tweet with an image of a strobe light and the words, "You deserve a seizure for your postings," by a user named @Jew_Goldstein, which I do not believe is his real name. Eichenwald, who has epilepsy, did in fact have a seizure because he was tweeted this image and he didn't know, you know, he looked at it and he had a seizure, which is horrible. The strobe image from, this is the second time a strobe image from a Trump supporter has been sent to Kurt Eichenwald. The first one didn't result in a seizure, but this one did. Now, on December 19th, a Dallas County judge issued an order allowing Eichenwald's lawyer to issue subpoenas to Twitter to compel the company to reveal the true identity and location of @JewGoldstein. Twitter agreed to the order. All right. Now, the reason any of these people knew that Eichenwald has epilepsy is because he wrote an article in response to the craziness about Hillary Clinton, you know, oh, she must be sick. And people were saying she has epilepsy and this and that. And he's like, no, I have epilepsy. She doesn't.
People are writing a misinformation campaign.
And yes.
Like if he has this condition, he has the right to say the truth about it. Like he's going to say the truth about it.
Well, and that's the point. You know, that's why he brought it up to begin with. And then people, sick fucking people, sent him images of strobe lights to cause him a seizure. And actually did. That guy could have gotten killed with that. If he's sitting at his desk and he doesn't know.
And like I'm a defender of freedom of speech. You don't have the right to assault someone. That is flat out assault.
Oh, that's assault. Like, there's no question about it.
That is 100% assault. Right. And like it raises an interesting issue to me where, like, the idea of, like, people have this idea of anonymity on the internet. It's like, first, no, you if a judge is willing to order a subpoena and Twitter's going to cooperate, that's Twitter's decision.
Well, this is here's the thing, right? I think we assume because it's something that you can access from your house or your phone, it feels private. But I've had this conversation with Joey, I guess privately, ironically, that Facebook is a public square, right? You feel like you're going on there and you're kind of sharing it with the world, but that's a private place. It's a place that you need to gain membership to. You sign up for it, you put a password in, you create it, you know. So they have a right. People complain about First Amendment things, and Twitter's the same way. They have a right to shut down whatever they want. It's not. It's a business. It's not just the public.
And the First Amendment, freedom of speech, it says that the government cannot restrict your freedom of speech.
Right.
It does not say that a private institution can't stop you from saying something on their platform, and also doesn't say there won't be consequences to what you say.
Absolutely. Like, and, you know, there's degrees to which I'd like people to be able to say whatever they want. Now, this is a different case. It's not just saying something that's actually intending to injure somebody that you know could be injured by what you do. So that's to me, this is the same as going up to somebody and punching them from the back of their head. You know what I mean? This is what they did.
Yeah, and like, in the past, there have been companies that, like, it's a weird thing where, like, there are companies that, like Google, a lot of time will not cooperate with subpoenas that want user data. They won't give that information up.
Right, which is a whole other.
Yeah, it's a whole other issue. Yeah. But it's like, is that weird thing of, like, there's that, it gives you that sense that no one will ever get my information out of these companies. Twitter has been shutting people down for hate speech lately.
Yeah,
which
I had a tweet that I was actually proud of. I had an idea about how to handle it, because a lot of, like, the right wing alt right people or whatever, they go after people very hard, and they're it's repulsive shit. People that they know have been sexually assaulted or whatever, they'll get raped, you know, they say really fucked up things to
and they
people.
Make it seem worse because they have this whole, like, their whole community bands together to work together to go after
and so it
one
becomes
individual.
A very coordinated attack against people. Leslie Jones, you know, I don't know if that's strictly alt-right, but really, people descended on her, she felt terrible, they hacked her, they put her in. Okay, my idea for what Twitter could do to solve both problems: you could keep people's ability to say whatever they want, their freedom of speech, which Twitter's under no obligation to do that, but okay, but in the idea of an open and, you know, free discussion, take away the ability of people that you know are, like, known hateful people and abusers or whatever on Twitter, take away their at symbol. Do not let them use the at symbol, because then they can't go at Man Samp, go fuck yourself, we're gonna come kill you, whatever. They can say whatever they want, but they can't specifically direct it at anyone by adding them. So the person that they're talking about doesn't get the mention in their, you know, their feed or anything like that.
And they're just the small subset of people who actually want to listen to that guy's opinion. Right. And already, if you're following them, you already share his opinion.
Right. But you cannot say it to someone specifically because you're an animal. When you prove that you're not an animal, then maybe we'll allow you to talk to other people. But if you want, just go on your Twitter, say whatever you want. And if people don't want to look at it, they don't have to look at it. That's my solution. I think it's actually a pretty good solution.
Well, it's like, I know, like, Reddit has, like, shadow banning people where they just make it so you can't actually, like, your comment shows up to you, but no one else is, like.
Well, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, it's kind of like you can keep spinning your gears and trying to say these things, but if you're going to prove that you can't be mature enough to have an actual conversation,
you're an animal.
Yeah,
that's it. You can't do it. You can't function like a person.
We'll put you in the corner. We'll put you in the corner and time out until you can behave.
Right. To me, I'd be 100% okay with anything that you actually have to log into to use on the internet. You should get your name. It should be your name. I have no problem with that. I have my, you know, obviously I'm at Man Samp on Twitter and, you know, all the social media stuff. But my header name is Chris Flannery. It is me. There's a picture of me. Anything I ever sign up for, because consciously I don't want to be like Ratface 69 and go on there and you know, it's me. It's me using it. So I don't want people to think it's not me. If it's my opinion, I'm putting it out there. If you don't like it, we can have a discussion. But I don't want to be in that position. And I think we're going to get to a point down the road where at birth, your birth certificate, you know, it's like you get your Gmail, you should get your Gmail account, your whatever, you know, and that's just how it's going
to
be.
But I would not trust my parents to come up with an online handle for me. I'm just saying, like, that.
Well, it's going to be whatever your name is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that.
But then it raises questions, people later, if they're trans and they change identity. You know, well, it's like this whole, everything.
You basically
crazy,
have to, like, have your own social security number just for internet things.
Yeah, but why not, right? It's like you should be able to be identified by that. And if you feel uncomfortable, you know.
But at the same time, the internet is such a global thing that you can't, like, just having. So you do that for Americans, and then you can easily just go around that with a VPN, get out of Russia, and then.
No, absolutely. There's a lot of different. But
so it sounds nice in principle.
It's more complicated, and you can be tracked more easily.
I'm curious if they're actually going to find this guy who sent the video.
Oh, I think they're gonna find.
Well, he might. It's pretty easy to put in fake information or put in a fake name and.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that. But again, now that's the second part of this. It raises a lot of questions of. Is that a step we want to take? Because I think we're going to go there. And in this case, it's a very cut and dry case. This guy's a piece of shit. He goes after somebody that he knows he can hurt, and he does hurt him. We'd all like to see justice be done there. The problem is when you get into a gray area type of situation, or where the government is asking, or an extra governmental organization wants to subpoena Twitter, now you're setting a bit of a precedent, and that's all stuff that needs to be weighed in this conversation.
Yeah, and I know, like, I hope they find this guy. He's not a good person. I think they probably will. But then I know if I was going to go and become a hateful animal, not really planning on it.
Yeah.
If I was going to do that, it would make me think twice about whether I put my
You never plan it. You just turn into one. It's very liberating. Okay, relax, Trump.
But I mean, like, if I was going to go and do that, I'd think twice about putting my real information. I'd it's pretty easy to make fake accounts, and I'd do that.
Right. Well, that's the point, though. You know, it's like I can't be the biggest piece of shit I want to be because everybody's going to know it's me. So I'll create a fake account. Well, yeah, no, you don't get to do that anymore. You know, even on. Now, there's other aspects to it where I find annoying. On Facebook, a lot of people, friends of mine, I don't have Facebook anymore, but when I was on there, and of course I know how it works, people who are friends of mine that are teachers or whatever work in certain professions, they don't want to have their you know, their drunken exploits on Facebook and all that stuff. They'll use their middle name as their last name, or they'll use their first name and have some kind of bullshit secondary name. That sucks to me that people can get in trouble. Like, if you go out and you fuck around and you get in trouble or whatever, but it's not this type of thing where it's super malicious. I don't think you should be able to lose your job over that. Even the repugnant shit that people do, where the one chick that was on the flight, she was going to Africa, and she said something about, like, oh, I can't get AIDS, I'm white, or whatever the fuck she said when she was going to Africa. She landed in Africa and she got fired. But it's like, if it's not affecting her job performance, it's just an asshole thing to say.
But it still ties into, like, you have freedom of speech, but there are consequences to your actions. And, like, if you remember a while back, there was the social studies teacher who stomping on the American flag.
Yes.
It's like, I defend his right to say it, whether it was smart of him, like, whether, like, there are consequences, whether you like them or agree with them or not.
Yeah.
Like, people will react how they will react.
Yeah. So, anyway, so this is an interesting conversation that obviously we'll keep having, and we'll see where this goes. And, you know, thank you to David for sending it. That it's an interesting story, and this guy's a piece of garbage. I hope Kurt Eichenwald is, you know, all right. That's crazy. It's a crazy thing to do. Could you imagine doing that? Like, again, it is tantamount to just walking up to somebody and being like, I don't like what you said, and punching them in the mouth. Like, you can't do that.
A seizure is a very serious thing.
And it could have killed him. And what if he's on a train or something, and he looks at his phone instead of looking at it on his computer, and he sees it, and he fucking has a seizure, and he falls onto the track or falls and hits his head. You could have killed this guy, and that obviously could have happened in his office where he saw.
I mean, you could, like, you can clamp down your jaw can clamp shut, and you can bite your tongue off.
Yes,
it's horrible things can happen.
Absolutely, and it's a crazy thing to do. And on top of that, then even you look at his fucking motive, and it was like, I don't know what you said about Trump. Like, you're a
petulant
child.
You're a petulant child who someone needed to tell you no in your life.
Right.
Someone needed to tell you, pull you aside and say you can't have it if you're going to throw a tantrum.
Yeah, you're going to be brought down by a little blue bird.
Yeah.
That's gonna be the problem for you. All right, let's go on to the next story here. This is an annoying one, frankly. Oh, you know what, I do have a Kurt Eichenwald quote. Let's listen to Kurt Eichenwald and then we'll go on. He says, somehow we've descended as a nation to the point that people think it's justified to cause severe harm to someone simply because of politics or because they believe it's funny. I've decided to pursue this case so that those online who believe they can do whatever they want, even inflict serious medical damage on others, under the cloak of anonymity, will learn that they are not beyond the reach of the law. I fully intend to pursue this matter until this individual is arrested for his assault. Which I can't.
I think that's very much what you just said. Like,
yeah, you can't go against it.
Anonymity doesn't only goes so far.
Right. All right. Next thing. This is the NYPD and body cameras. According to the New York Post, which, you know, I take the New York Post with a little grain of salt
yeah.
New York City is offering police a 1% pay increase to officers required to wear body cameras. In 2017, there's going to be 1,000 officers with body cameras. In 2018, 5,000. There's 35,800 officers. So it's like a small amount of people. But to this pay increase, like, oh, it's cumbersome for them to wear a camera. That's what I have to say about that.
Well, I mean, like, the union is pretty heavily fighting this. And
well,
like,
I have a quote there.
Yeah. Well, it's like, and they're saying it's like, oh, it's more dangerous for officers and stuff like that.
Well, let me read the quote. Okay, this is Patrick J. Lynch. He's the Patrolman's Benevolent Association president, who you know, I've seen this guy talk a number of times. I think we've had quotes of his on the podcast. I don't like the guy. I understand that he has a job to do and he's protecting police and whatever, but he is not an honest broker. And it's, well, I don't like the guy.
A union isn't trying to win the support, like, isn't trying to tell you what things. It's negotiating with the city. He's negotiating with the city with the comments that he's making publicly.
Yeah, we'll listen to this comment. Yeah. We can parse it. Body-worn cameras present serious concerns for the rights and safety of both police officers and the public, and those concerns need to be addressed before the cameras are widely deployed. While paying police officers for wearing the cameras will not resolve these issues, it would at least signal a recognition of the increasing duties and burdens that NYC police officers have been asked to assume without any additional compensation. No, you're not being asked to do anything that you weren't asked to do before. Now there's just going to be a level of accountability because if you fuck up, we're at least going to see it.
But you see, the way I read this is that in a union negotiation, like, you can see the same thing in the NFL. You don't give up anything without getting something in return. So he understands that his job is to make sure as many cops keep their job. It's like he wants to protect the police officers, and if they have to wear body cameras, and if they it. We've seen it time and time again when officers go into a conflict, go into a shooting without a body camera, the jury takes the grand jury
because it's the word. Well, and oftentimes it's the word of a police officer who we already kind of revere in this country and like look at on this pedestal versus the word of maybe no one because the person's dead. You know,
or the witnesses are minorities who are there is an inherent racism and they're going to be less likely to believe than he's a law enforcement officer. So I don't necessarily blame Patrick J. Lynch, just because, well, he's doing his job. He doesn't want to give up anything that's going to, like, make it harder for him, really make it harder for him to do his job. And, like, he has his motives, clearly.
Yes, understood, but here's the difference, right? You mentioned the NFL. Yes. The NFL is not a public service. I mean, it is to an extent because everybody likes watching the NFL and whatever, but that's a business, and if the NFL didn't exist, people would be upset about it, but it doesn't need to exist. The police work for the people they're protecting, you know what I mean? So I get your point, and of course he's doing his job, and the reason why this is even being done to begin with is because there's been a rash and a new recognition of the fact that there is a problem here, and you know, cameras being involved at the very least could help have justice be done after the fact or potentially stop things in a best case scenario.
Well, and ordinarily I'm pro union.
Me too, but to an extent.
Well, like being pro-union, it's because it gives the workers a way to collectively bargain with people who have more leverage.
Right.
So it provides leverage to the workers. The problem with unions, and a lot of people have them, I have this issue, is that they take that power and then use it to protect people who do not deserve protection, people who, because you're a cop, you're going to keep your job even if you've done these horrible things.
Yeah.
Like unions have had a bad history of, oh, this worker will get drunk on the job and do the shit, but you can't fire him because he's in the union. That's where unions go wrong. So it's like, this is what the cops are doing now, which is, oh, we don't talk about what happened. Our mouth is shut. We protect each other.
Right.
And if you want to improve your public image, you have to get rid of the dead weight.
Well, and if you want to be a real public servant, which is what this is, it's not a job that you're just doing for fun. It's not your passion. Well, maybe it's your passion to be a cop, but you're protecting people. That's your whole job. So if something is an impediment, not having the cameras, you know, to protecting people or whatever, then you have to have the cameras. And it shouldn't be like we have to bribe you essentially to do that. That's ridiculous.
I mean,
but to your point, when one of your fellow officers kills somebody and it's unjustified and you know that, step up then.
I mean, I think there's a little bit, what you said is not entirely correct. I think, like, for the average patrolman.
Don't do that. It was entirely correct.
for the average patrolman, it is just a job. Like, it is the way they make their living. To the people at the top, to the people making the decisions, then it's more, okay, you got into this because you want to, it's more about the public service. Or some people get into it because it's a way to get influence. People have their own motives for getting into public service.
Yeah.
Not all public servants are out. Do it altruistically.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, that's
as we see, as we can blatantly see.
Yeah. So anyway, so this is an interesting thing. I mean, to me, the body cameras is a must going forward. If it involves a pay increase, fine. But I think it goes against the spirit of why we'd want the police to be wearing the body cameras to begin with, where it's like they can't recognize as a group that this is a necessity because there is a bad element within the police. It helps the police. It helps their argument because if you have video of all these incidents and you go, well, it seems like 9 out of 10 times they do the right thing. It is an animal that fucks up or makes a mistake, they need to be weeded out. But to me, this just gives more, you know, if you're doing things right and you feel things are justified, then what's the concern?
Well,
you know?
And like lately I've been seeing videos online that I don't know if it's like a coordinated effort by cops, but it's like I've been seeing good body cam videos of like cops helping people out, cops doing, it's like that you can do, that can be a very powerful tool. If you
absolutely
say,
yeah.
Okay, yes, we have these bad instances, but here's the good things we're doing.
Right, let's like, sift through that information. Right, we need more information.
There's a video I saw a week or two ago. It was like a cop pulling over a college student on his way to give a presentation. The guy was like speeding because he didn't know how to tie a tie. It's like the cop helped him tie his tie and then sent him on his way. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You talked to the guy and had a conversation. Not everything, most of what a cop does isn't a shooting.
Right.
But you got a real PR problem because of how things have gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And beyond, and yeah, I know what you mean by PR problem, but right, beyond a PR
problem.
Well,
yeah, so, but there is that. Like,
From like their perspective, I understand.
Yeah, I'm saying this, think about it from a union perspective of how can we make ourselves look better?
Yeah.
That's one. Like,
yeah, be seen doing the right thing more often than not.
Marketing, perhaps.
Yes. All right, so anyway, next thing I got here, death penalty. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, 20 people have been executed this year. 28 were executed in 2015, and in 1999, 98 people were executed. That's a record high. 80% of the executions this year took place in Texas, which had 7, and Georgia, which had 9. For only the second time since 1982, Texas has not executed a black man, which is good, but also crazy that that's, you know, knowing the racial history in Texas and all those problems. The thing that comes to mind here, those are good numbers to me. Trump is going to get to appoint Supreme Court justice. 1, probably 2. I mean, let's be honest. And I think he's going to be in there for 8 years. So almost definitely 2. That is going to affect this. That is going to shift the balance back way farther to the right. And I think you're looking at a situation where states and the movement to get rid of the death penalty is increasing, but you can get a very vocal minority in there, and people that elected Trump, that can reverse that. And I think that's a big problem.
I mean, I'd like to first of all say it could actually be 3 justices, because there's already the Scalia opening.
So at least one.
So Ginsburg is 85 or something like that, and Kennedy is 80.
Yeah, and Kennedy is the swing vote in most of the cases. He's Reagan appointed, but he's been known to, you know, go either way on cases.
And Trump does not have any qualms about just stacking the bench. That would make it a 7-2 split. That just ruins that. That's like 50 plus years before.
Oh, it's a generation of kids that are going to suffer with that.
Yeah, that would be true pain.
Yes.
In terms of the issues with, you said this is the first year that no black man has been executed in Texas.
Right. Well, since 82, yeah.
I'm hesitant to say that it's inherently racist that is that there are more black men on death row.
Right. Well, that's that could be its problem.
I think the inherent racism is that, okay, it's more of an institutional racism of the war on drugs and all these things marginalizes them, and there is a larger proportion of criminals that are black because we put them into a worse situation to begin with.
Right.
They're starting from a lower, like, we give them a disadvantage to begin with, and then that's how they end up there.
Yeah.
So that's actually where I saw the one quote from that article I really did not like, because Texas imposed just 4 new death sentences.
Who said this quote?
Let me pull up the article.
Okay.
I just had the quote written down.
Yeah. It's
from the Guardian article you sent me. Where's the name on this? This is great podcasting here. Just looking.
Don't worry about it. Maybe I'll cut this out. You don't know. No, I didn't cut it out. People are going to hear what you did. Read the quote. Got it. It's okay.
Okay, yeah. Texas imposed just 4 new death sentences this year, down from 48 in the peak year of 1999. Even more eye-catching for those familiar with Texas's dark racial history, this was only the second year since 1982 the state failed to snuff out the life of a single black man. Like, the language in there is just incendiary, meant to imply just the journalism there. It's like, okay, like, oh, it's snuffing out. It's
right.
They're executing everyone of all races equal. Like, they're.
I understand what you're saying, but this is a good example. By the way, this isn't a specific quote for someone. This is just a quote from the article.
Yeah, it's a quote from the article. Sorry about that.
That's the thing. When I presented it, did I use the word snuffing? See, it's funny because I read the same article. That's exactly the same information, but I can see that that's,
well, it's
editorializing information. It's just a well-written article, but
but like the power of words is staggering. It's like, you think of, like, it's so easy to sound racist with your words, where it's like, okay, we're going to say, like, the word thug gets thrown around. It's like, that means a black man, basically.
Yeah, well, it's derogatory.
And,
yes.
And using the word snuff is clearly just, it's trying to draw up images of lynching. It's like, okay, this is trying to get you emotionally riled up more than just express the fact.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily trying to evoke lynching. That's fine if that's where it went. But it definitely is saying, you know, it's more than just executed. It's being like, it's snuffed out of life, you know, which, fine. You know, that's the perspective of the person that wrote it. But I think
in terms of journalism, it's, if you just show the facts there, it shows an inherent racial bias that that more black men are executed than is proportional to the population.
Yeah,
like you show that with the facts. I don't like the journalism aspect of saying, "Oh, is the, like even more shocking with the bad racial history? This is the first time that no one's been snuffed out."
Yeah,
it seems like there's a real attitude to that.
Sure, yeah, there is, but that's the thing. Recognize that, and that's what we were talking about before. It's like you can read it and you can get the information from it, but recognize that there's a bit of coding there that, you know.
And I just urge everyone, when you read an article, notice these things. It's like, notice where the bias is. There is bias. Like every author is going to have, every writer will have their own biases. Like,
sure,
it's pretty clear where this one is.
Right. Well, and this isn't something that you disagree with. That's the other thing. It's like you know.
It just bothers me. It's like try to be
understood.
Like, so.
We'll see, but again, I don't think they have to try to be. Just you as the reader and you as a critical thinker, you have to be able to notice that stuff. And then once you start to see it, you start to realize that pattern and you can get information from things that might ordinarily seem biased. You can get the information out of it and then, you know, go through it and take out the things that you know are not actually fact or just opinion or emotion or whatever.
Well, I come from a science background. I don't claim to be a good writer, but I do know, like, when I had to write a report or something, it's very much, you want to pull yourself out of it as much as possible and put in just the facts and just the things you can actually prove.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, in journalism, you have to do a bit of that.
A bit of that.
Yeah.
Sure.
So.
All right. Israel. Now, I want to get to this because it's been a big story all week. And it's an interesting one. It's an interesting conversation we can have. I had an article saved a couple of weeks ago, I guess, or last week. And I figured, I'll talk about it next week. And then, of course, this whole story came out, so it fits perfectly into it. Last Sunday, 40 Israeli families living in an unauthorized West Bank outpost accepted an Israeli government proposal to evacuate the site, avoiding bloodshed and ending a years-long court battle. The outpost is Amona, and it's the largest of 100 illegal outposts in the West Bank, you know, the disputed areas. Fast forward to Friday, a UN Security Council resolution passed 14-0, demanding a halt to all Israeli settlement in the occupied territories. In that resolution, it says that there is no legal validity, including East Jerusalem, for there to be settlements there, and it is essential for salvaging the two-state solution, and it is a flagrant violation of international law. The United States abstained from the vote, which, of course, has caused waves on both sides, but mostly the Republican side, and in Israel.
Well, Chuck Schumer did take offense to it as
well. Yeah, well, that's what I was referring to. Yeah, we'll get into it in a minute. The U.S. abstained from the vote, which requires 9 votes in favor and no vetoes by the U.S., France, Russia, Britain, or China for the resolution to be adopted. The United States abstained. Everybody else voted in favor of it, so the resolution passed. Before we get into it any further, the resolution doesn't specifically do anything. It's just it's a world body saying, hey, we all agree that this is problematic, and the only way that this is going to be resolved is if you stop doing these settlements. So I have U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power at the UN talking about the resolution, and I'm going to play that clip now. I have a couple of clips here because Netanyahu says something, Kerry, and we'll get into it. But this is Samantha Power, I believe on Friday, before the vote.
It is because this forum too often continues to be biased against Israel, because there are important issues that are not sufficiently addressed in this resolution, and because the United States does not agree with every word in this text, that the United States did not vote in favor of the resolution. But it is because this resolution reflects the facts on the ground and is consistent with U.S. policy across Republican and Democratic administrations throughout the history of the State of Israel that the United States did not veto it. The Prime Minister has said that he is still committed to pursuing a two-state solution. But these statements are irreconcilable. One cannot simultaneously champion expanding Israeli settlements and champion a viable two-state solution that would end the conflict. One has to make a choice between settlements and separation. We believe, though, that continued settlement building seriously undermines Israel's security. Some may cast the U.S. vote as a sign that we have finally given up on a two-state solution. Nothing could be further from the truth. None of us can give up on a two-state solution. We continue to believe that that solution is the only viable path to provide peace and security for the state of Israel and freedom and dignity for the Palestinian people.
All right, so that's Samantha Power talking. Now, I also have a clip, by the way, so let you behind the scenes here. My laptop's having a little bit of an issue with the sound, so I'm not playing the clips. Matt's actually in control. I think he sabotaged me, so he
it's a real
this.
Power play. I already took Joey's seat. Now I've taken over the computer duties.
Crazy. Next week it's just going to be Matt just doing the podcast. Me and Joey are both dead.
You think you got married of your own free will?
Oh my God, he's been plotting this for years.
Years and before I even knew you.
We got. Let's see what I have here. Oh yeah, we got a Benjamin Netanyahu video. You have it there, Matt, right?
Here we go.
Over decades, American administrations and Israeli governments have disagreed about settlements. But we agreed that the Security Council was not the place to resolve this issue. We knew that going there would make negotiations harder and drive peace further away. And as I told John Kerry on Thursday, friends don't take friends to the Security Council. I'm encouraged by the statements of our friends in the United States, Republicans and Democrats alike. They understand how reckless and destructive this UN resolution was. They understand that the Western Wall isn't occupied territory. I look forward to working with those friends and with the new administration when it takes office next month.
All right. So Donald Trump, of course, weighs in on this. And this is what he has to say. Tweets it. And Netanyahu responded on Twitter, actually, which is delightful. This is what Trump says. We cannot continue to let Israel be treated with such total disdain and disrespect. They used to have a great friend in the U.S., but not anymore. The beginning of the end was the horrible Iran deal. And now this, UN. He goes, now this. And then he puts UN in parentheses with an exclamation point. Like people didn't know what they were talking about. Stay strong, Israel. January 28th is fast approaching. And then Netanyahu responded, President-elect Trump, thank you for your warm friendship and your clear-cut support for Israel with an Israeli flag and an American flag. And then he added Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. just so they were in on the whole thing, so they knew that they were talking. By the way, the U.S. will send $38 billion in military aid over the next 10 years. So it's, to me, well, and I also have the John Kerry thing, but before we'll play what John Kerry had to say because he came out the other day and said it.
Well, I just love the, first of all, I just love... the whole line, friends don't take friends to the Security Council. That's the most like elitist bro thing to say. It's like, right. It's like, oh, do you have enough power to say that? You might be elitist.
Yes, I agree with that for sure.
Picturing like Assad saying, "Oh, come on, Coney, don't take friends to the Security Council."
Yeah, but anyway, so to me, I get why Israel's upset about it. However, and I, of course, the Republicans are going to react to it negatively because there's a lot of lip service paid to Israel. And under Obama, let's not pretend that if something really happened with Israel where we needed to go in and protect them or do something, there's no question about it. Obama's used the phrase ironclad before when it refers to Israel. That is separate, though, from this issue to an extent. I understand why there's concerns, you know, on the part of Israelis and Jewish people in the world because of a history of anti-Semitism and different things that come against the Jewish people. But Israel is a country and the United States is a country and we're separate from them. And to me, there's no question in my mind that if something is going to happen in terms of peace or some kind of resolution between Israel and Palestine, it is 100% on Israel, the superpower in the region, to make that change happen. And, you know, people can, oh, they send mortars over to Israel and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they have the Iron Dome. And it's not good. It's not excusing it. But the Palestinians are in a desperate situation. A lot of kids are not going to school. They have no job prospects. It's on Israel to make whatever's going to happen there. And then if further attacks happen and it becomes a problem, then Israel, to me, has a very definitive leg to stand on. But until they actually stop building, they're not allowed to build the settlements there. They're just not. It's disputed territory.
Well, every time they use the argument that, like, oh, horrible things have happened to the Jews, therefore we have the right to do this. No, horrible things have happened to you, and therefore you should know that what you're doing to other people is wrong.
Well, like, in this case, absolutely.
It's like, really, that's where the argument is so flawed to me.
Yeah.
So, and to go back to what Netanyahu said, if the Security Council isn't the place to address this, where is?
Right.
It's
right.
It's not the UN has ever been accused of being a too powerful organization that has really that moves too fast and sanctions too hard.
Oh, of course. This is toothless anyway. Yeah. It's not like that it actually directs Israel to do anything. It's just being like, hey, we all see what you're doing, and this is not the way to peace.
How often is a UN resolution considered toothless? How often does that term go with that, the word UN?
Of course. Well, right. And meanwhile, the Republicans, all they do is complain about how the UN's worthless and they don't do anything and they're weak and whatever. Now this resolution comes out and they're like, oh my God, how could they do? Are you kidding me?
Sorry, that $38 billion we're sending you?
Yeah.
That we're paying for the right to do that. We're your closest ally. You need us. We get to say we're doing something wrong.
Well, and again, it's not even like the United States went with it. They just allowed it to happen.
And if North Korea is acting up, China absolutely has the right to say,
yeah,
get your place. Simmer down.
Right.
It's like China can say that to North Korea because without North Korea, without China, North Korea doesn't exist. Without U.S. and U.S. support, Israel's in a much worse position. We've helped you a lot.
Yeah, no question about it. Right. And really, let's play the John Kerry clip because I was going to get into
it. Got a little sidetracked.
Yeah, no problem.
Israel's permanent representative to the United Nations, who does not support a two-state solution, said after the vote last week, quote, "It was to be expected that Israel's greatest ally would act in accordance with the values that we share and veto this resolution." I am compelled to respond.
Kerry had a rough time during this little clip that I'm about to play. He's like, just stop a second, go, excuse me, and have a sip of water. He wanted this to be a very like powerful thing, and he obviously has a tickle in his throat the whole time, so it's just kind of, all right, whatever, good.
Today, that the United States did in fact vote in accordance with our values, just as previous U.S. administrations have done at the Security Council before us.
Right. Yeah. The United States vetoed it in 2011. There was a similar thing. So they did actually support it then, but we're talking 5 years ago. So did anything change? No. In fact, there's been more settlement building.
And I believe 5 years ago was the Obama administration only veto in the UN, right?
Yes. Yes.
Recognize that this friend, the United States of America, that has done more to support Israel than any other country, this friend that has blocked countless efforts to delegitimize Israel, cannot be true to our own values or even the stated democratic values of Israel.
That's really what's at odds here. Like, I understand having a very close relationship with Israel. I get that. Nobody's questioning that. And Obama's never said anything to the contrary. That doesn't mean that we, as the United States, have to do everything Israel wants to do. It just doesn't. That's not how it works, and it can't work like that. And a lot of the fucking Republican from the, you know, rhetoric, believe me, is not just because they're very worried about the safety of the Jews in Israel. It's because they think Jesus is coming back. Period. I'm not going to, there's no doubt in my mind that has a factor. The evangelical Christian support of Israel and paying for different settlements and different things over there, that is part of it. And let's not pretend that that's not something to do with it. They think they need to control Jerusalem when Jesus comes back. And that's a lot to do with this.
Well, I believe it was in the Samantha Powers quote saying that you can't have a democracy and have Israel be a Jewish state.
Well, that's what Kerry's going to say. You stepped on a guy.
You're really acting
like a Joey right now. Yeah,
and we cannot properly
actually, pause it real quick. By the way, just to mention, I was saying Joey was going to call in. I saw Joey on Christmas Eve. We always go to our friend Caroline's house. She has a Christmas Eve party. We go over there. And I was like, so you're going to call in this week, right? And he's like, actually, I meant to tell you, my flight's at like 3 o'clock on Thursday. And I was like, so you can't call in? He's like, yeah, I just didn't want to say it on the show. I figured I'd tell you now. And I was like, why wouldn't you just say it? I was like, what am I going to get mad at you? That's the time your flight is.
Well, I mean, you've known each other almost your entire life at this point. He figured like a small thing like that will actually end your friendship, was his concern.
He's such a weird person. Yeah. So that's why Joey didn't call it. He's on a plane.
What it was he wasn't wearing the correct stone on him that day to protect from... hatred of those sorts. The amethyst doesn't cover that.
No, he makes me weep. I look at it and he just points it at me and I'm powerless against him.
Joey pointing his stones at you makes you powerless.
Just play the clip.
Protect Israel if we allow a viable two-state solution to be destroyed before our own eyes. Despite our best efforts over the years, The two-state solution is now in serious jeopardy. The truth is that trends on the ground, violence, terrorism, incitement.
Just have a drink of water, John. This whole thing, this to me, you watch this and go, this is why this guy didn't win. There's not an ounce of charisma in this guy. And not that this is supposed to be like a bombastic speech, but it's just, it sounds like he's trying to cough the whole time. It's like, just stop and fucking take a sip of water.
You know, I hadn't noticed that until you mentioned it. Now I can't help but hear
it. Yeah, well, it's crazy. That's all I heard.
Settlement expansion and the seemingly endless occupation. They are combining to destroy hopes for peace on both sides and increasingly cementing an irreversible one-state reality that most people do not actually want. Today, there are a number, there are a similar number of Jews and Palestinians living between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. They have a choice. They can choose to live together in one state, or they can separate into two states. But here is a fundamental reality. If the choice is one state, Israel can either be Jewish or democratic. It cannot be both. And it won't ever really be at peace.
That's a strong statement, but I don't think a completely inaccurate one, because the reality of the situation is there is a group of people, the Palestinians there, that have a claim to that land as well. Yeah. And they were there first, realistically.
And they were there before the country existed, and they don't get given citizenship to it because the way Israel has come about, they wanted to try to they wanted to keep Palestinians from really getting citizenship. They made some channels, but it was like,
no, it's not a great, it's not a good situation. And to your point before, the Jewish people understand what it means to be a marginalized group, to say the least. That's what's happening between Israel and Palestine right now. And I understand there's Hamas, there's different terrorist attacks, there's mortar attacks, there's been stabbing. It's not like Palestine is completely, you know, clean in the situation, and it's the Israelis that are the aggressor all the time. But when there is a conflict, there's a hell of a lot more Palestinians getting killed than there are Israelis. And the day-to-day living situation and the influence and everything, Israel is so much in a better position than the Palestinians are. And something either needs to be done in a two-state situation like this, where the settlements stop and something actually happens, or just understand the reality of Israel should go ahead, do what they're going to do, and know that this will never stop. But it is on Israel, in my opinion, as a superpower and as a United States ally, to get something done. And I feel like the momentum is there. The cause of the Palestinian people is more prevalent now than it ever was before. And that's just a reality of the situation. And it needs to be that way. Why do we want to have this conflict last forever?
But
it's not saying get rid of Israel. No, of course. Israel absolutely has a right to exist and prosper and do everything. But I feel so do the Palestinians. They have that right as well.
But it will never happen under Netanyahu.
No, and it's certainly not going to happen under Trump.
Like, it doesn't surprise me at all that Netanyahu and Trump are going to be like best friends.
No, I mean, they're cut from the same cloth, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, like they're like the same person. Like, Putin will control Trump.
No,
Netanyahu will be best friends with Trump.
Yeah, well, Netanyahu, I mean, look, let's not say they're the same person, but I think personality-wise and ideology, Netanyahu's done what he needed to do to actually become prime minister and be involved in their political scene forever.
But radically far to the right. I believe years ago, he basically said, like, oh, what? Like, he said, had a similar line along the lines of, oh, like, I'm just saying there's Second Amendment solutions. He had that sort of line. And
oh,
it
really?
Led to the prime minister getting shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It actually led to someone to a death. Like, he's that type of guy.
Yeah, he's the right way. And again, let's not, I think it's filtered through our media as though this is something that everybody in Israel agrees with. It's not the case. I mean, there's certainly people within Israel. I believe it's pretty evenly split.
I would need to look into the actual Israeli government. I believe it's a parliamentary system, not two-party
system. No, but I'm just saying, as far as public opinion is concerned or whatever, but there are people absolutely within Israel that do not support Netanyahu and do want something to happen here that involves a two-state solution. This isn't the same way things happen in this country that happens in other countries, but I think it gets filtered in a way that it just seems like everybody in Israel agrees this is how we have to do, and they're all behind Netanyahu. It's not the case. Well, not the case.
I mean, I believe Netanyahu has a coalition government right now.
Or he does. Yeah.
Okay, so it's like by definition, the majority, a plurality voted for him, not a majority.
Right. So absolutely.
Which again, we have here.
Yeah. all right. So anyway, so that's something that Obama did, and the Obama administration wanted to do, I think, to make a point before Trump became the the sitting president, as opposed to the president-elect, and we'll see where it goes. But obviously, like you said, yeah, the Trump and Netanyahu are going to be, I'm doing the little, my fingers crossed here, they're going to be much closer than, you know, Obama and Netanyahu ever were.
I mean, you can't read a thing about Netanyahu and Obama without they're saying, like, their tense relationship.
Yeah,
their,
of course.
Like, their strained relationship.
Yeah, but that's, but again, you're 100% right, but that's what, at a certain point, that's what it has to be. If the United States thinks, or the Obama administration feels, I think correctly, that something needs to be done there and it needs to be Israel that's going to make that happen, yeah, then that's going to get a little, well, going to get a little tense.
That's one of the perks of being a superpower is when you're the one giving out the aid, you do get to give your opinion.
Yeah.
It's like if someone comes asking for money, I get to give my opinion on it a little bit.
Right. It's so interesting, too, that, you know, it'll get painted that way on the right where it's like Obama's trying to destroy Israel and whatever. We gave them $38 billion. It's not like we're not trying to protect Israel, and nobody believes that.
Obama just like the neglected parent handing out the allowance, but then Israel's the teenager. Obama's the neglected parent.
Right. Well, and also going back to the Iran deal, which Trump brought up, you know, and that's been a disputed thing. That benefits Israel. There can be arguments on both sides, but if Iran does not get a nuclear weapon, which is what that deal does, it absolutely, in my mind, keeps Israel, Iran from getting a nuclear weapon for at least 10 years, maybe more. That's a benefit to Israel. You don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon.
It benefits Israel. It benefits U.S. interests.
It benefits everybody.
And
there.
We have Trump now saying he wants to repeal that, get rid of that deal. And like now we're going to have it start an arms race again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to get into the Trump administration update. But all right. We got this from Jeff on Twitter. He tweeted it to me the other day, and I figured, yeah, well, we might as well get into it. So there's this new thing on Twitter called @SmileVector. It's like a bot that is on Twitter. You can go on and look at it. It makes celebrities smile. You can take a picture of celebrity not smiling, and then it uses some kind of algorithm to search for images of that person, people that look like them, to change images from them not smiling to smiling. It's not great, but it's obviously just the beginning, and it gives you an idea of how manipulated things can be. We're in a situation where people don't trust facts. Wait till people can't trust images or videos or audio or any of that stuff. Things are going to hit a crazy level of manipulation that everything is up for debate, really, at that point.
Well, despite the technology's best effort, it still could not work on Bill Belichick.
Very good. Bill Belichick, notoriously a curmudgeon, but a real football genius, the guy. Yeah.
I might be a Patriots fan, for those who don't
know. It's okay. I like the Patriots, too. I'm not a big football. I watch football because I, you know, whatever. But I watch football, but I don't have a particular allegiance to a certain team. But, yeah, I like watching the Patriots play. I think that it's a brilliant management of that team, brilliant coaching. Brady is legitimately probably the greatest quarterback of all time. You know,
this is what you're going to get the angriest tweets about
response to this episode. I'm sure. But saying that, it's like I like other teams too. I like watching what the fuck's his name? Aaron Rodgers. I like the Packers. There's a lot of teams I like. I like the uniforms of certain teams. I don't like the way they play. I like the Oakland Raiders. It's sad that Derek Carr got hurt. I like a lot of teams.
Well, I don't like the Oakland Raiders, but it's still sad that Derek Carr got hurt.
Yeah.
But for the record, just one last thing on this.
Sure.
I'm from New England. I'm not just a bandwagon fan. For everyone listening, don't tweet too angrily at me.
You'll be right. Matt D. Weiss on Twitter if you want to follow. I think you're doing a nice job today, buddy. I appreciate you filling in for Joey.
Thank you. Glad to be making this power play.
We got Tom White, who's the guy that created Vector Smiles, @SmileVector. @SmileVector. This is what he had to say, and then we'll get into the Trump administration update and get the fuck out of here. He says, I definitely think that this will be a quantum step forward, not only in our ability to manipulate images, but really their prevalence in our society. I don't think many people outside the machine learning community knew this was even possible. You can imagine an Instagram-like filter that just says more smile or less smile, and suddenly that's in everyone's pocket and everyone can use it. Very interesting, because you can also manipulate a story very easily with a picture. A picture's worth 1,000 words. If you have a picture of Trump, what if you have a picture of Obama at some kind of memorial? Whatever. I'm not going to say what particular memorial. You have him at a memorial. And obviously it's a somber tone. And then you have the ability to really manipulate it and make it look like Obama is smiling, grinning at something that he's not, or whatever.
Put a sombrero and some macarena and hat at a funeral.
Well, that you can do now, but I'm just saying, but to be able to manipulate somebody's facial expressions, even if it looks like he's smirking as opposed to...
I mean, I still see this as a very cool thing to have. Like, it's very cool that we
have
this
cool
technology.
But it's extremely dangerous because you know the shit's going to be manipulated. And I'm not saying to stop it, but it is happening.
And this goes back to, like, you have to have critical thinking thought. There be the ability to critically think. And you, like, if you're going to, if they try to do something like this, you have to be able to say, okay, is there more than one source saying this, or is it just one person? Like, where's the information coming from?
Yeah, that's going to be so hard. It's such a gray area, though. That's the thing. Like, when an image gets out there, you have to now start. People don't have the time to do it, and that's really what becomes the issue.
If you go online, any time that I see a Photoshop image gets posted, someone always manages, like, 5 minutes later, we'll find the original image. Like, someone always calls out a Photoshop. I don't. Like that, there's someone has the time to do that. It's
right.
Incredible.
I have this argument with my fiance all the time, soon to be wife. Actually, next time you hear from me, I'll be a married man. She'll show a video or something. I'm like, that's edited. I can see it. Like, cause I do that. I do video editing. I do audio editing. I'm a graphic designer. So like, I can see it more easily. She's like, oh, stop it. No, it's not. I'm like, I swear to God it is. I guarantee it is. But that's the thing. She doesn't work in that. Most people don't do that type of stuff. So when they see an image, it's even if you can kind of prove it and show, they're like, maybe that's fake. Shit gets lost in the shuffle. And that's really the situation that we're going to find ourselves in very soon.
Not everyone has, like, your fiance has an untrained eye for these things. Like, it just
and a lot of most people do.
Yeah, and that's why experts are a good thing, and having people who actually understand the knowledge.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, you got to trust experts. Not that I'm saying, like, oh, I'm some kind of expert, but like, I have more experience in it. But right. We cannot get to a point where experts are just thrown out. But we're also at a point, though, where there's climate scientists that get co-opted by big money interests, and they get paid off to do specific research. So there's even things that you got to pay attention to there. You have to see where, you know, follow the money.
Follow the trend, like the greater trends, and follow the big, like, look at the big picture, not just, you can't just say one thing, or one person says it, therefore it's true.
Right.
Like in science, everything has to be peer-reviewed. It has to be recreatable.
Yes.
Everything has to be, like, it's statistical. It's...
Yeah. All right. Trump administration update. You ready to do this? This is the last one before the guy becomes the president. J. Alex Halderman and Matt Bernhard, both from the University of Michigan, who researched the recounts in the U.S., confirmed the outcome, but found that, quote, hacking an election in the U.S. for president would be even easier than they thought. All right. I've talked about this documentary a number of times, Hacking Democracy, which I actually just watched recently. It's not visually or, you know, production-wise, just a brilliant documentary, but the subject matter is unbelievable, and I still think it's very relevant to what we talk about all the time. Watch that documentary. Michigan. Now, here's why. Here's why hacking could be way more possible, and it's more likely. We've heard so many times people talk about, you should have picture IDs and we should have more voter ID at voting. Do you know how hard it would be to fucking rig an election by having thousands and thousands of people with fake IDs and whatever go into a specific county and try to rig? You know what's easier? Rigging the machines, right? And that's what Hacking Democracy really talks about.
Rigging the machines or the companies that are doing the counting.
Exactly. Michigan uses two voting machine companies for 75% of its counties. Two. 20 employees to each company, and in Pennsylvania, 70% of digital votes leave no paper trail, which is what is at odds in Hacking Democracy. It's the company Diebold, which I believe is out of business at this point. But watch it, because that was 2012. This is when this documentary takes place. It's not that hard to imagine a world now and in the future where the same type of shit is happening. And to your point, right, who are the companies that are doing it? All you need is one person at a 20 employee company that goes, I want Trump to win Michigan. And it'd be fucking very easy. And you watch the documentary because it really lays out the case of how easy it would be. And the fact that there's no paper trail. And even in the documentary, there is a paper trail. And the paper trail shows a different result than what the main tabulator actually puts out. So it's very easy. I'm not saying that it happened, but we probably wouldn't even know at a certain point.
Well, and there should be a required paper trail. Like,
Like,
what's so bad about saying, okay, it prints out a receipt when you get from the machine. Someone can check that it gave them the right thing, and they hand it into the...
Well, it's supposed to go through a county, you know, the clerk or whatever, the elections officials. And even in that case, the documentary shows specific places in Florida, whatever, they threw them out. they didn't save them. They didn't officially record them like minutes after the vote stopped. They did it days later. So there's a lot of different things that could happen. And bear in mind, it's not dead people voting. It's not, oh, black people with their fake IDs. It's like, are you out of your mind? The real challenge here is protecting the voting machines, electronics, and who is controlling that. And if 75% of a state is controlled by two companies, rest assured that vote could be illegitimate for sure.
And I, for the record, I just abused my power. I left my computer plugged
it.
In.
I wasn't going
to
say
I got an email, and I just want to mea culpa. I'm sorry.
not a problem. How many times has Joey had his phone go off or his alarm go off or whatever? He's just scrolling through Facebook like a rabid animal.
I would never do such a thing.
I know that. Last week, the president-elect, Donald Trump, tweeted about nukes and then commented on the tweet via phone to Mika Brzezinski. And I have that clip there, Matt. I think it's about the first 24 seconds of it. So if you want to get that set up, and then we'll play that in a minute. This is what Trump tweeted about it. He goes, The United States must greatly strengthen and expand its nuclear capability until such time as the world comes to its senses regarding nukes. That's sort of 1984 type of logic where it's like, we need a billion nukes so that way people realize we don't need nukes. Like, okay. We also have this. So he's tweeted that. Then he called Mika Brzezinski, who's the co-host of Morning Joe, which is a program on MSNBC with Joe Scarborough.
You'll have to stall for a second. I tried to get the clip up and it crashed my computer.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to keep talking because the video, now this is her, Mika Brzezinski, relating what Trump said to her on the phone. So we take that with a grain of salt, but I don't anticipate that she's just a liar and she's making things up. We're going to, when Mac, you let me know when the computer's back.
It's a day of technical difficulties.
It really is. I don't know what the fuck's going on. So what's crazy about the clip, too, which we're going to play in a minute, it was like their Christmas theme show, and it's Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough in their pajamas sitting in front of a fireplace, and then they're talking about nuclear weapons. To me, it's like God is just playing a joke on all of us. This is all just crazy. They're literally wearing footy pajamas, and they're talking about how devastating Trump's worldview about nuclear weapons is, and that this is the source that we actually have to get it from.
The state of American media.
Yeah, really. Do you have it up?
Give me one more second.
All right. Well, let me say this then while we're waiting for that. The nuclear stockpile totals. And you tell me if we need this amount of nuclear weapons in the world. Okay. There's 15,375 nuclear warheads in the world. Russia and the United States have 93% of them. Russia has 7,300 nukes. The United States has 6,970. Then France, 300. China, 260. The UK, 215. Pakistan, 130. India, 120. Israel, 80. And North Korea, less than 15. But my God, letting North Korea get the nukes was not a good idea. And Pakistan, too. Pakistan and India, I say it all the time, they're going to be fighting over a water source in an increasingly, you know, climate change ravaged world.
Overpopulation.
Man, you do not want those two countries going into nuclear war.
To be fair, it wasn't as much we could do about North Korea getting nukes when China's protecting them, and we couldn't really go and invade if we wanted to.
Yeah, but that's a problem.
The damage of going in would have been worse than letting them get them.
Right. Now, there's 15,375 nukes in the world. Do you know how many I think we probably need to end the world? Four. You know what I mean? Like, one gets launched, another one gets launched, two more get launched, and that's it. We're done. That's simple.
The whole issue of an arms race just baffles me because, so what do you plan on doing with these nukes? Like,
right.
It's just to show how big your dick is.
Yes. Well, and to Mattis's point, Mad Dog Mattis, the probably potentially and likely Secretary of Defense. Right, is that right? Or Secretary of Defense? Yeah, it'd be Secretary
of Defense. Defense, yeah.
Yeah. He's concerned about it. He's worried about a false alarm or something happening. Instead of having 7,300 or almost 7,000 in the United States, how about we just do it proportionally? Russia gets four. The United States, you know what I mean? Like, because at a certain point, that's all you need. Then we don't need thousands. Do you understand that we are not going to be able to launch thousands of nuclear weapons? It's insane. Well, it's a crazy thing.
I mean, like during the Cold War, you need to have nukes in different places so you could respond from different places. But we can launch them wherever we want at this point.
We can hit anyone anywhere. Right.
Like,
for real.
Like and they're more powerful than before.
Yeah. You got the clip?
Yeah, okay.
This is now Mika Brzezinski telling Joe Scarborough about what Donald Trump told her.
Also, I think I have that color shirt that he's wearing, this flannel shirt.
Yeah, you probably do.
Mika asked the president-elect, while we had the opportunity, what his position was on trying to clarify the tweet yesterday.
Pause it. I mean, am I lying? Are they in? They're in pajamas.
Yeah, it's,
they're in front of a fireplace.
It looks just ridiculous. Like, they look very comfortable. The camera just showed up at one of their houses that morning.
Or whatever. It's just delightful to me. Like, they are talking about basically one of the most serious things that could ever possibly happen. In footy pajamas.
And you expect someone to like show up under the mistletoe in a minute.
Yeah.
The nuclear arsenal, and the president-elect told you what?
Let it be an arms race. We will outmatch them at every pass.
And outlast them all.
And outlast them all.
Okay, so that's Donald Trump's mindset on it. I don't like that. I think that's a very dangerous mindset. Again, the United States and Russia have all of the nukes, essentially. They have 93% of them. And I just don't, I think it's so disconcerting. It's also crazy, again, that people, Republicans especially, will rally around that. Whereas Reagan was for nuclear disarmament. He thought it was a bad, you know, he was for getting rid of nuclear weapons.
Well, and the whole point, like the nuclear arms race to begin with was against Russia.
Yes. And Trump, now we're buddies with Russia.
Yeah, like so. Trump has made it clear we're not trying to compete with Russia. So
no.
Who is threatening to overpower our nuclear superiority?
Right.
Like, I'm confused.
Well, I'd also like to see Trump, if he's buddy-buddy with Putin or whatever, he has some kind of relationship with Russia, he thinks we're going to be allies, ask Russia to even it out. They're at 7,300, we're at 6,970. See how well that goes over, to be like, get rid of 400-something. You know what I mean? Let's see what happens there. I bet they're not going to be too receptive to that, so I don't know what Trump thinks he's going to do. He's going to grow our nuclear arsenal by thousands. This is a very... Again, this is all shit that we've talked about, and it's a very dangerous situation. And this is the very situation coming to fruition here, that this guy might actually launch a fucking nuke. He might.
And to be fair, we don't know what Donald Trump's going to do. He's been, like, he's a liar. He's proud of that fact.
Yes.
So we don't know.
Truthful hyperbole.
We don't know if he's going to actually build more nukes. We don't know if, do treaties allow, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Don't we have non-proliferation treaties?
Yeah. So I tear them up day one.
Sorry, but you don't have the power to just tear
anything. Don't tell me. Finally, on Tuesday, Trump tweeted about the economy, taking credit for it. These are his tweets. The world was gloomy before I won. There was no hope. Now the market is up nearly 10% and Christmas spending is over $1 trillion. The U.S. Consumer Confidence Index for December surged nearly 4 points to 113.7, the highest level in more than 15 years. Thanks, Donald, which he tweeted to himself. He said, thanks, Donald, to himself. By the way, holiday shopping is expected to reach $656 billion, not a trillion, and consumer confidence is reaching a 13-year high, not a 15-year high, as Trump said. So, of course, he's lying in what he tweeted. But, all right, he's exaggerating. This is shit you got to pay attention to. He has nothing to do with what's happening right now. Nothing.
Not a single, like, I mean, if
anything, literally not a single thing.
The increase in the market since the election is just because in the lead up to an election, there's uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Uncertainty will lead to cause stability in the market. When if you'd see the same numbers if Clinton was elected, like Wall Street would be fine with it. Like,
right.
Like the thing against her was too buddy buddy with Wall Street. Do you think the stock market would crash because she got elected?
Well, right, and let that be a lesson to you, people that think he's going to drain the swamp and all this bullshit. Yeah, well, you know why things didn't take? Because they're like, oh, it'll be fine. He's totally in bed with us. So anyway, but again, the economy is completely Obama's now. And then you know when Trump takes over, then it's his. Then we'll see what happens.
And the article you sent me on this, I got a little annoyed at because it has this fault, like undeserved optimism saying, oh, but because he's taking credit for the good things, like we can also point a finger and say, oh
it's ridiculous.
Like, oh, the bad things are also yours. No, it doesn't work that way that he's going to get blamed for it. You actually have, like, he's marketing himself right now. Right. He's good at that.
Yeah, of
course. Democrats aren't good at playing the marketing game.
Well, they'll try to do it, but again, it doesn't really matter. It matters to the people that voted for him. Are they going to hold him accountable? That's what we always talk about on the show. You take responsibility for the person you got into office.
And I mean,
hold them accountable.
To be fair, like there's a lot of the alt-right people who voted for him that they're like, there's that diehard branch that there are, and I don't want to say like there's a small racist branch that like has that. Okay,
you don't have to parse your words. All right, there's a percentage of Trump supporters that are racist.
But like,
period.
The ones that it's going to be interesting is the like coal country voters, like the Wisconsin, Michigan guys who want the jobs back.
Yeah.
What will bother them is, oh, if jobs don't come back, we voted for you because you said these things to us. If you don't follow through on our promises, there's nothing. We're not We're not so tied down to make America great again, as you say.
Right. Well, that's...
And those are the voters that he could lose. Like, West Virginia could be...
Maybe.
He could really anger West Virginia. Like, if they take away his
maybe.
Health...
Maybe. That's always the question. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. Right.
That's my hope. That's...
Yeah.
That's my hope. But it's...
People pay attention to what media they want to. They don't like whoever the Democrats are. There's a lot of factors at play. But right.
Oh, like my
best case scenario, they just actually judge him based on what he did.
Like my Facebook feed, I keep seeing things like, oh, like West Virginia voters like upset and being duped that they're losing their health care
well, yeah.
and like not getting jobs back. He's like, yes, but that's also filtered for what I see because I have friends who have a liberal bias.
Yeah, but also though, you know what though? I don't even people that are quote duped. You didn't get duped. You had plenty of time to pay attention. The fucking campaign went for 2 years. If you thought that Trump somehow was going to be the guy to come in and save your Medicare or whatever, you're wrong. So you made a mistake and you suffer the consequences. Do not vote for him next time. That's the only response. And if you don't, if you still can't vote against him, then fine. Then you get what you deserve. At a certain point. That's what it is.
And think critically in the future.
Yeah.
Just think things through and be willing to listen to both sides of the coin before you make your decision.
Absolutely. All right, man. That's it. That's all we got. Got any final thoughts here?
I think we've been talking for a while now. I think I got it covered.
Yeah, we did it. All right. Well, Samsonites, listen to me. I'm not going to talk to you for 2 weeks. I love you guys. Don't worry. I'm going to be trying to pay attention. I'm going to bookmark some things. Joey said that he was going to make a list of things that we missed and we'll maybe do like a rapid fire. He's probably going to forget to do that, so I'll probably just yell at him on January 20th about that. Otherwise, enjoy your New Year's. And if you want to get in touch with us over the break, I'm probably honestly not going to be answering a ton of things, but if you tweet me or whatever, it's probably the best way to go about it, or Snapchat or whatever. It's @mansamp on all social media. You can email us mandatorysampson@gmail.com. You can also go on soundcloud.com/mandatorysampson, catch up on some old episodes maybe you missed, or leave a comment there. And you can also go on iTunes, rate, subscribe, do all that good stuff. We will make our triumphant return on January 20th, 2017 with MSP 111. Of course, we'll be recording the day before, but you get it. It'll be fine. And until then, I love you guys. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk in 2 weeks.
This has been a Stand Up Labs production, powered by digital media. Subscribe to new and archive episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. And find all of our shows at standuplabs.nyc.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Yeah.